This is CliffCentral.com.
It is time for the Burning Platform, brought to you by Nando's. Every Thursday, we check in on all the big stories in politics, all the big stories in South Africa that we need to know about, and Justice Malala is here to help us wade through them. Oh, man, where do we begin? Can we start with our public protector? Is she the public protector, or is she the president's protector?
This week was quite a thing. It was quite a thing because the public protector, first, all along, you know, there's been this big debate about, oh, the Reserve Bank and the mandate of the Reserve Bank, and it's all big words and so forth. And so she brought out that report into the Absa Bankop deal. And she said that the constitution needs to be changed to change the mandate of the Reserve Bank. Now, every lawyer, in fact, not every lawyer, every law student with law, whatever law, Constitution 101, was jumping up and down and saying, what's going on here? You're a subject of the Constitution yourself, and you are turning around and saying, no, you need to change the Constitution, that those guys don't have the same kinds of powers that I would have, and so forth.
When this happened, a lot of people, including me, were saying, but hang on, this woman went through a rigorous process where she was interviewed, She was questioned, people checked out her credentials, she's an advocate. This is such basic law that she looked really bad.
Let's go back to that process. You know, that process is interesting now when you look back on it, because you'll remember our great friend David Mahlobo and his Secret Service. Mm. You'll remember that there were several candidates, Kevin Malunga, who's the Deputy Public Protector at the moment. People like him were suddenly, as they were, in fact, in Kevin Malunga's case, the day before he appeared before the Portfolio Committee for his interview, then the Secret Service issued a press release saying, these guys don't have security clearance, so in fact, they cannot be the public protector. So there were about six candidates who were top-notch, right in front.
And they were immediately disqualified.
Boom, immediately disqualified. Then you had two candidates left. It was Judge Siraj Desai and Busisiwe Mkhwebane. There was a big push that, you know what, we need to continue to empower women. And Judge Siraj Desai, people said, no, he used to be, you know, very activist, and he'll be against, so-and-so, maybe he's too political. And so, safe pair of hands, Busisiwe Mkhwebane. So what we've seen so far with this public protector's report into Absa Bankop is that everyone, even people who are on her side, if you will, people like the finance minister, Malusi Gigaba, have responded and said, you have overreached. How dare you go this far? Mm-hmm. This is not for you to even meddle with. Make your ruling. It's binding to a certain extent, and so forth and so forth. But you don't go there. But she went there.
And of course, it cost us millions, billions in the rand's value tumbling.
Exactly. So it was her, and then it was the deputy finance minister, and then it was the ANC conference, which then started jumping up and down around the mandate or the ownership of the Reserve Bank, and billions were wiped off the value of the rand as people started saying, ooh, you're changing the goalposts now. What does it mean? What's going to happen? And so forth and
right.
So forth. So all that happened. And then on Monday, she comes out and says, oops, sorry, I didn't mean to make you poorer. I'm changing my mind. I'm no longer calling for the changing of the mandate of the Reserve Bank. I'm doing something else.
But magically, the rand didn't reset itself, and all that money didn't come flooding back. It's gone.
It
cost us a lot. Her mistake wasn't just her mistake.
It's the Nomvula Mokonyane economic principles course. You can't just say, if the rand falls, we'll pick it up, because there was no picking it up. It was just, oh my word, what incompetence. What were you thinking? What were you doing? And so that was that. And so all of us, many people, were saying, oh, she must step down. You know, people from Hammanskraal are no good. I hope you're listening, Mabale. You see, it's not just the Free State.
Oh, is Busisiwe from Hammanskraal?
She's from Hammanskraal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, Justice.
No, we've done okay. Thato Matlana, Herman Mashaba, Busisiwe Mkhweba.
Now, she then overcompensated by some people's estimation, because in the last 2 days, it's almost though she's done an about turn.
No, I love it. With South Africa, you can't predict this place. You have to give it to, you know, you sit there and say, oh, Sia doesn't have a backbone. He would never do this. Oh, you know. And then, boom, suddenly she's made a fantastic quick turnaround. And she's saying, Jacob Zuma. So she basically, in her response to President Zuma's court application that no, the public protector, the former public protector, Tulima Dansela, has overreached by saying he can't appoint the judge in
state capture investigation.
In the state capture investigation, exactly. So, what she then, remember what Jacob Zuma is trying to do is say that I am the judge, I am the jury, and I will appoint the jury myself in my own court, in my own trial. That's what he's saying. Remember, Jacob Zuma is at the heart and center of all these allegations of state capture.
In fact, everything. Even Busisiwe Mkhwebane says he's involved so much in all of the different charges,
exactly,
and all of the different kinds of corruption, that it would be impossible, and it would be everything except impartial,
yeah,
for him to appoint the judge.
Absolutely. And so, but Jacob Zuma has the audacity, the gumption, I love that word, has the gumption to go to court saying, no, how dare you step on my paws? Ah, you can't tell me to do this. Now, if you read the state of capture report and what Tulima Dansela did, you got to give it to her. You know, Tulima Dansela, every week you sit there and you think, man, you've given us so much. She did a beautiful thing. She said, you have a problem, Mr. President. I'm going to help you now. Okay, so I'm going to help you get around your conflict of interest. So I'm going to give you the power to, on paper, appoint this thing. So your power, you're not breaking the law. But because you're so conflicted, or let's put it directly, you are so dirty, you're so deep in the mire, that I'm going to give you an out. So I'm going to say to the Chief Justice, Mohoeng, okay, Chief Justice, you give him a name. One name, and then he must just sign. So she gave him an out, but he still said, no, you can't do that. He doesn't even stop and say, yeah, but you must do that because I am down in the gutter of this thing.
Now, okay, let's just cut to the chase on this one, because I think a lot of us are confused by the process.
Yeah.
But maybe what we need to know is why the president would be so opposed to the Chief Justice giving him that one name. This Chief Justice is a Chief Justice he appointed.
Yeah, yeah.
We once thought that this Chief Justice was the sort of man who could be bent to his will.
Mm-hmm.
He turned out not to be.
Indeed.
In fact, he turned out to be exactly like we're talking about Busisiwe Mkhwebane now, someone who, on a single judgment,
turned,
got the whole of South Africa's confidence from negative to positive.
Yeah, exactly.
So, in this case, whose name could he put on there that would be so dangerous to the president? Or whose name would the president prefer to be given to him?
Well, we don't have names, but we know we can paint the kind of character that that President Zuma would like to see there. So think about the inquiry into the arms deal and what a farce that was, and how no one has been found guilty. It took years and years.
Who was in charge of that one?
Judge Siriti.
Right.
So you look at that judicial commission and you say, wow, well, it's essentially President Zuma can stand up and say, yes, we did have a judicial commission of inquiry. No one was found guilty. Nothing was done. And you can go and read the Siriti Commission. It's lodged in the library at Masamba Ndlovu and Union Buildings and Parliament and so forth and so forth. And technically, he is right, because there was a judicial commission.
Right.
But what did it find? Now, you will remember that Again, Shabir Sheikh went to jail because he was allegedly bribing the president of the Republic of the deputy president at the time, Jacob G. Zuma. So that Jacob G. Zuma could get some contracts going on the arms deal. You will remember that there was a point at which there is overwhelming evidence of one Jacob G. Zuma sending a message to a French arms company saying, saying the lights on the Eiffel Tower are shining today. I think it was the line. And all this is about the arms deal. It never even got ventilated in the Sirleaf Commission. So, what does President Zuma want out of a judicial commission of inquiry? First of all, President Jacob Zuma wants the terms of the judicial commission into state capture to be wide. And by that, he says, let's not look at what the Guptas have done with certain people. Let's go back to 1652 and look at that. And look at, or maybe not 1652, he says, no, let's go back to the start of apartheid, okay? Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the National Party winning elections in 1948, and let's start there. Now, hey, you know, you're a young guy. It's just, Sia will be tottering along on his walking stick. Hello. Yes, how's the Commission of Inquiry going? Like 100 years from now, you know, with all the technological advances that have now. Sia will still be wondering, where's the Commission of Inquiry into State Capture? Because we'll be starting in 1652. So when you listen to people like Bladen Zimande or let's say Cyril Ramaphosa yesterday, they're saying, no, there's a lot of talk here, but let's stick to the point. There are allegations about how the Guptas used you, Mr. President, Malusi Gigaba, the finance minister, and others to gain massive, lucrative tenders at Eskom, at Transnet, and so forth and so forth. Let us look into this. So that's the first thing. President Zuma doesn't want that. He wants us to go way back. Let's go back to 1990. Let's look at how white monopoly capital, monopoly capital, manipulated Nelson Mandela, manipulated Thabo Mbeki, all that stuff. So that's where he wants to start. And secondly, he says, no, I want to appoint the judge. He doesn't see the irony that, guy, this is all about you, and you want to be in charge of appointing the judge. It's taking the word ridiculous to a whole new level, but that's what it is.
So she said, Busisiwe Mgwebane, she said basically that that decision is going to be the Chief Justice's, in her opinion.
In her answering papers in Jacob Zuma's court application. What I find amazing is that so she said that, and so she hasn't flip-flopped from her initial positions. She's just done the right thing in this particular case. And I think that's fantastic. I mean, yeah, you know, you guys have been saying nasty things when I walked in here about Herman's Kral people. Well, there you go. Herman's Kral people coming to the front. And I say big up to her for that. It will be interesting to see where it goes. But there's a political question to this, Gareth, and it's what's going on with the ANC that Cyril Ramaphosa can stand up at the Communist Party conference yesterday and say, we want the Commission of Inquiry. Everyone wants it. Everyone. Nowadays, everyone's going around, yes, Judicial Commission of Inquiry.
Right.
But where is this thing? Why is it we're living through a time when no one, there's no consequence? So we all talk about it, but nothing's happening. Billions of rand have been stolen. I love that. I don't know if it's actually an Afrikaans expression, but if you're from Pretoria, you'll know. They'll say, oh, you know, Gareth did it. Oop, oop. As in, Uop is open eyes. Like, we all saw it. It's Uop, Uop, this thing, okay? But nothing happens. I mean, it's. I guess the English would be, word would be blatant. It's blatant. It's whoop whoop, and nothing is happening. Nothing is happening. How long have we been talking about? Oh, the Guptas took money from the Free State. Thank you, Mabane. Money from the Free State, from some dairy, sent it to Dubai, then sent it back to South Africa
to pay for a wedding
at Sun City. By the way, you couldn't use a black masseuse at that wedding. You had to.
You couldn't even use black waiters.
No,
apparently.
No.
So these are people who are quite happy to take black money, but they're not happy to have black people working with them.
Yeah.
Or having them around their family. All that. Well, Cyril even brought that up last night at the SACP conference. But let's move on to that, because the SACP conference is something that I think a lot of people take interest in, even though the SACP sometimes sounds like a bit of a lame duck in the tripartite alliance. You know, they kind of bark from the sidelines. Blade has been uncontested,
yeah,
and he's been re-elected to the position of Secretary General. But what happened there that was consequential?
I think first of all, what's happened there is that you're seeing a pushback campaign against Jacob Zuma that's building around the left and the left around the SACP. So that conference was essentially a platform for people who didn't get their views ventilated, for example, at the ANC policy conference, to stand up and say, I will speak. First of all, Jacob Zuma was told in no uncertain terms, Baba, we don't want you here. Thank you very much, but no. So he didn't, they don't, I mean, if he'd showed his face there, I think there would have been a riot. So he didn't go. Cyril Ramaphosa gets invited. Cyril uses the stage essentially to say, I'm here, I'm available, I'm going for it. I'm a little bit skeptical of the Ramaphosa campaign because, you know, he has sat by Jacob Zuma's side since 2012 when he decided to be his running mate. He's been in the deputy presidency since 2014. He has seen a lot of the rot. So, you know, we sit here and we think, oh, yeah, we follow this stuff. But there is something about people who sat in that 34-member cabinet. I just want to say, Sia, Nelson Mandela had 27 people in his cabinet. Jacob Zuma has 34 people in his cabinet. In Nelson Mandela's time, we went from junk status to being a country that's fixing its debt. But with the 34 we've got at the moment, we just keep on going under. Anyway,
debt. Yeah, well,
moving on.
Clearly more is not more.
More is not more. I just want to say that Barack Obama had 17 in his cabinet. But anyway.
So you were saying that the 34 people in that cabinet were party to at least some of the decisions which have been made.
Yeah.
They were witness to if they weren't party to. And none of them raised a voice in opposition.
No. Guys, you know, let's so we've got several problems. We've got unemployment. We've got serious issues that will lead to social distress. So today in Lynesia, there are protests going on. In Soweto, there are parts where there are protests going on. All this strife. Education is in a mess. Unemployment is getting worse. By 2018, according to the International Monetary Fund, it will be 28%. It's 27% now. In 2008, when Thabo Mbeki was fired, it was 20%. Things are getting worse, not better. So that's our first problem. Our biggest problem, and our other problem, is the Gupta family and its hold on our body politic. Now, you will remember that Fikile Mbalula, way back in 2011, went to the National Executive Committee of the ANC, arrived in the meeting and started crying. This is according to Julius Malema, who told us this way back in 2012, I think. And started crying and saying, Mr. President, why was I told by the Gupta family that I'm going to be sports minister? Why did I, how did this happen? And so all these people in the NEC of the ANC in cabinet have known about the extent of the Gupta family influence on President Zuma. That essentially they know first what's going to happen. And not only do they know first, as they did when Nhlanhla Nene was fired in 2015 December, not only do they know first, in some instances, like the appointment of the gentleman from the Free State, Museveni Zizwane, they got his CV and they looked at it and said, you know what, yeah, this one's the right guy. So you've got Museveni Zizwane as the Minister of
Mineral and of Energy Affairs.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, so people, all these people who are jumping up and down, Lindiwe Sisulu, Cyril Ramaphosa and so forth, they cannot now claim to not have known.
Yesterday, Charles Ngakula was here with us, and he was explaining how it went down when Thabo Mbeki was recalled.
Yes.
And how that last cabinet meeting went. And he explained how somber it was and how there was argument and fighting, and there was this passion from Mosiwa Lekota and all those people who then resigned and started their own movement. That at least, it may have been a failure for all intents and purposes, but at least it showed the men had principle.
You know what? One day we'll go back to this. There was a principle stand.
Right.
And that principle stand, you cannot...
You can never accuse Cyril Ramaphosa of principle.
You can accuse him of playing politics, because I think there's a lot of that going on. I think that the decision to throw in his lot with Jacob Zuma, a compromise leader... I mean, Jacob Zuma was compromised by the time he became president in 2007. We knew certain things about him. We knew that he was implicated in the arms deal corruption. We knew that he had slept with his friend's daughter without using a condom and claimed that a shower would help things along. This was not a leader who should have made it at all, first into the presidency of the ANC or the presidency of the Republic. And so all these people knew, and they knew exactly what they were getting. And so I'm a little bit skeptical about some of this, let us do this and so forth. Can I just segue a little bit on one point on the whole state of capture issue? Everyone who's saying we need an investigation needs to do something for all of us and to ask this question. Who is going to do an investigation? Who investigates now? Because if you think about it, the decision by the ANC in 2007 December that the scorpions must be done away with led to, in 2008, I know people like Sia like to criticize this government and say, no, they don't deliver, they don't do this and so forth. Walla, 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 walla. I want to say, don't ever say that, Sia, because this administration, this government, the ANC, can move swiftly.
They did with the scorpions.
With the scorpions, that decision was taken on December 20, 2007. Within 4 months, in 2008, 4 months, the scorpions were history. Mm-hmm. I remember, what was his name, Yunus Karim, who later became a Minister of Communications, then was kicked back to Parliament. He's an MP now, a very good one, an anti-Zuma one. If you think about the Deputy Minister of Arts and Culture, Megiso Ochu, all those, they were incredible. They worked. And boom, the scorpions were gone. Over that time, think of the top investigators from the scorpions. Think about who was that gentleman who was implicated in McCarthy, who went to work for the World Bank. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the brightest and the best have all left. They work for private security companies, whether it's your ADT, Chubb, all these other people.
And what we've got is this pathetic Hawks Institution, which is run by Burning in Tlemeza.
Exactly.
Which is, it's a stooge operation, right? It's a joke.
It's a joke. It works to investigate people who essentially Probably
like Pravin Gordhan.
Exactly. Go and arrest a criminal. Oh, Pravin Gordhan, come here. Why did he give someone early retirement? I mean, this is the elite crime fighting unit. Not any old unit, the elite crime fighting unit. So one of the things that has happened in South Africa is that the skills you need to investigate a crime where money leaves South Africa, for example, and goes to Dubai, where you can follow the trail, all that expertise has moved largely to the private sector.
Mm-hmm.
And so in state institutions, the state institutions have been hollowed out.
There's no capacity.
And so that whole thing we used to talk about, the capable state, that the state has the skills to achieve and implement the plans that it's got, that there aren't the people to do that. So this, all these calls for an investigation into state capture, for example, who's going to do it? Because if you look at the incredible work done by Thuli Madonsela to write the State of Capture report, who can do that? Who can take cell phone records and show that, Des van Rooyen, you were at the Gupta house not once, not twice, not three, but seven times in 7 days on the days before you were announced. It's forensic work that needs skills.
Expertise.
And I don't think the scorpions have it. Sorry, the hawks have it.
There are no scorpions.
There are no scorpions. The SAPS doesn't have it. Anyway.
Just quickly, I think it's worth a remark because we get so little time to discuss all the many things that happen in a given week.
Mm.
It's worth remarking that Bladen Zimande has pivoted very quickly and very cleverly to retain his position in the SACP. He was about to become irrelevant. He certainly is an irrelevant cabinet minister.
Yeah.
He doesn't have any meaningful part to play in Zupta politics, but he's managed to hold on, to cling to some kind of authority.
Yes, I find it amazing. Do you know that the South African Communist Party has a formation called the Young Communist League? The Young Communist League is led by Buitima Namela, I think, still is the leader. You'd expect that after 19 years as leader of the SA Communist Party, a few young communists would have come through the ranks and are ready and willing to succeed Bladen Zimande. I like Bladen Zimande very much. He's a very affable, fantastic, loquacious young man.
Locations.
We in the house, baby. We in the house.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Hey.
It's lit. Can I use another word with an L? So one of the things about him is that he's all these things. He's lovely. But, man, when you've been at the head of the Communist Party for 19 years and you can't find someone to rise through the ranks, why can't Solim Apaila become the Secretary General of the Communist Party? You know, you can't just keep pointing fingers at others. You've got to say, I too need to move on and do other things. You know, I can see a role for Bladen Zimande teaching in some faculty at the university, on some boards of some capitalist companies, whatever.
Well, Charles Makula, who was our guest yesterday, used to be Secretary General.
Exactly.
And before him, Chris Hani.
Exactly, exactly.
It's time for something new. Maybe there are no more communists.
maybe
it's hard to find a good communist
these
days.
It's an interesting thing because the Communist Party used to be, as it called itself, a vanguard party. So it would be Mabalo would arrive and say, oh, here's my application form to be a member. That's sorry. You know,
you're not communist enough.
You're not communist enough, you know, and you had to jump through hoops to become this thing. So as of June, I think I'm sure there are new figures for this conference that's on now, but I haven't seen them. But I think as of June last year, the SACP had grown phenomenally. It had 200,000 members. Now, that's no longer a vanguard party. It's a must party.
Almost come.
Yeah, it's almost come. It's we opened the doors. Oh, ideological education? No.
Even 200,000 I'm surprised by, because in a world of materialism where young people want cell phones, communism seems an anachronism.
It doesn't... South Africa is one of those places that continues to surprise political analysts everywhere. It's like there's a communist party and it's got 200,000 members. No, well, communist party across the world.
Even in Russia, you'd be hard pressed to find 500.
Guys are subsisting on 3 members in a country, and you've got 200,000. What's going on here? I think part of it is the coattails of the ANC that. The SACP can criticize. There was a time when, so if you were Ngakula and others, it would be, if you're a communist, you were almost on a higher plane of ideological standing than your, you know, common ANC member.
Branch level, nothing.
They were
sort of regarded as the intellectual vanguard,
yes,
as well, right?
They always provided, if you think about 1990 to 1994, every time the ANC found itself in deep trouble about what next in the negotiations, it was always the Communist Party that came through. So nowadays people like to jump up and down and say, yeah, Joe Slovo came up with the sunset clauses. And the sunset clauses, he did come up with them, but they broke the logjam between the ANC and the National Party. And so you had 1994 and the elections happened because the Communist Party was stepped into the breach and said, guys, this is where it needs to go, this is what it is, and so forth and so forth. So yeah. Just on the SACP, one, I don't think the SACP is going to walk away from the ANC. So a lot of people saying, yeah, no. Walk out of the alliance.
That's why Cyril was there.
It's not going to happen.
Plus, they couldn't survive on their own. They've never actually gone out and campaigned.
Exactly. What happens to the SACP without the ANC is basically
a think tank.
If that. So I don't think there's going to be walking away. I think you're going to continue to see this. Yeah, you are bad. You're terrible. Da, da, da. But we are staying. And so they're going to stay in Jacob Zuma's toxic cabinet. And they're going to stay in the tripartite alliance. And so at the end of the day, the SACP is a talk shop and a stage for people like Cyril Ramaphosa and others too.
And any real young communists will probably have joined the EFF by now.
Yeah, I think the Young Communist League is a total anomaly. In fact, the Young Communist League or the ANC Youth League have nothing.
They've been hollowed out like all those state institutions.
Yeah, exactly. But it's an interesting thing, the point you make about the real communists, young communists being with the EFF. If you think about the impact of the EFF, last week we had the ANC at its policy conference. What were the biggest talking points? Land. That's an EFF. The EFF
agenda
has
point.
Put land just strongly, powerfully into the center of our politics. Radical economic transformation.
EFF.
Julius Malema's party is economic freedom fighters. Yeah. So what's interesting is that the ANC used to get its ideas from the Communist Party. It now, or some parts of the ANC and its leader, Jacob Zuma, stands up in KwaZulu-Natal and says, we need to talk about land. We need to talk about economic freedom.
But
he is basically saying what Julius Malema was saying to him.
They're stealing all their good ideas from the EFF. But then the other thing is that he's being disingenuous in such a big way, because he's the one who's empowered traditional leaders.
Exactly.
Who are the primary landholders.
Exactly.
And who are the ones who could overnight change the entire layout of land ownership in South Africa with the stroke of a pen. There are chiefs and kings who could immediately empower millions of South Africans.
It's called populism. It's called it's an attempt to say, look at me, I'm gonna do this for you, I'm gonna do that for you. Whereas the solution is exactly here. but you're holding up some other mirage that, oh, this is complicated, but I can do it. Whereas you're not using the powers that you have to change things around. So what we're going through, particularly on the issue of land, is a bit of a, it's a sham. It's populism. It's I'll promise you things instead of using the power I have now to actually to do something.
Can we talk about Makosi Koza? She was on Frankly Speaking yesterday with Andrew and Rory, and she's joining us next week. This woman, I think everybody accepts that she's extremely courageous.
Yeah.
She's stood up for what she believes to be principle. We were talking just now about how Cyril and some other members of the cabinet don't seem to show any indication of principle. This woman has. She's now not only received personal death threats and has found it increasingly difficult to go home to Pietermaritzburg, but now even her daughter is being pulled into the fray by these crooks and these skellums and these skabangas who are threatening her life and the life of other members of her family.
Yeah. You know, I find it amazing that...
And not a word from anyone, Cyril...
No one.
A
single word. Jackson Tembu...
The Women's League, maybe they could step in here? I mean, this is a women's... Would they threaten a man like this?
You know, Gareth...
Am I asking too much?
Makosi Koza... is an incredible, courageous woman, and I think we are lucky to have people like her, people like Tulima Donsela, people who say this is the right thing. Now, what it does politically is say to Baleka Mbete, you need to tell me why her vote should be known, and if it is known, what happens? Because if you think about what the ANC Youth League in KwaZulu-Natal has done, it took her name and her address and put it on Facebook and said, this is where this impimpi, this person lives, and you can go and, you know, do this. What's the difference between that and what, for example... Black First Land First has done with some journalists.
Or even worse, to draw a much uglier and more stark analogy, isn't this precisely what askaris in the old regime used to do?
Exactly.
For the apartheid government.
Exactly.
Here's the troublemaker. Here's a cell of ANC support. This is the house you must destroy.
Exactly. So what you have here is a situation that Baleka Mbete needs to explain to us before August 8. You'll remember that on August 8, the motion of no confidence in the president will be tabled in parliament. MPs will vote. But before then, Baleka Mbete has to make the decision whether this is an open ballot or a secret ballot. If she says it's an open ballot, Makosi Kwaza's life, if she votes against Jacob Zuma, is threatened. And so I don't know how Baleka Mbete is going to get around this one name. Forget about Pravin Gordhan. Forget about so many other MPs who may or may not want to vote against Jacob Zuma, ANC MPs. But they have been threatened with loss of income, for example. They have been threatened with loss of life in Makosi Koza's case.
And even the loss of life of their children.
Loss of life of their children. So we have there's a real issue here. So I don't know how Baleka Mbete is going to say no to a secret ballot. I don't know how she's going to do it. If she says no, she faces lawsuits from all sorts of people. But she faces a contempt. Maybe not a contempt charge. But after what Chief Justice Mokgweng Mokgweng said, that people do not pledge loyalty to their party. There's no way. You pledge loyalty to your party when you join it. But as an MP, you pledge your loyalty to South Africans. And so Baleka Mbete might want to do certain things. She might want to say it's a secret ballot because... her hands are tied. she might want to say it's a secret ballot, because why does she need to protect Jacob Zuma so much? So I think she should go for it. I think that this is an interesting...
Well, Justice, if you were Balega Mbete, is this not an opportunity for you to...
redeem myself.
Well, perhaps redeem yourself, but also to pave the way forward for yourself, to give yourself some space to become something important in the next regime. Because if you stick with this bad lot and they don't win, you really are out on your backside and you're possibly in jail.
Possibly. And so I think she must have a bit of a headache. If she is a reflective person, if she is someone who thinks about herself, about her legacy, about her immediate position in our politics, I think she would think deep and hard about whether it's the right thing to do to not take on this secret ballot. So I'm waiting.
I'm just going to throw this one in there. Maybe when we reevaluate things and we look at the best possible scenario, maybe it's best for the speaker to not be an aligned party member.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that debate needs to happen. Sadly, the speaker is chosen from the elected members, and so you do have a position like this. But we've had some incredible speakers of parliament who came from
Freni
the ANC.
Jinwala.
Freni Jinwala was incredible and amazing. She had a temper.
Max Sisulu.
Max Sisulu, by all accounts, was fired because he was a good speaker.
Mm-hmm.
Max Sisulu was fired because he did the job in a manner that said, I am a South African. We are South Africans. And we are here to do the best for South Africans. And so that was his big, big mistake. And he rubbed up those in power, and Jacob Zuma in particular, up the wrong way. So somehow we need to break that logjam. And some people have done it by making the National Assembly Speaker someone from, not from the opposition, but from a smaller party. So if you look at Themba Godi, who's the head of the Public Accounts Committee in Parliament, he's been a fantastic Public Accounts Committee chair. And that's largely because he is slightly more independent, shall we say.
I surprised Mabali and Sia the other day by reminding them that we used to have a cabinet where there were actually ministers appointed from other parties.
Yeah,
I mean, Mangosuthu Buthelezi was acting president once.
Yes, he did invade Lesotho. But
I mentioned that to them. I mentioned that it was a course of some misdirected laughter. But we did. We used to have ministers, the best person put into that position, the person who could articulate the best policy.
Yeah. Musibudi Mangena of Azapo was science and technology minister. We've had quite a few. We've had a few. Even Peter Mulder was the deputy minister of agriculture. So, you know, we've had quite the
nothing like having a boer in agriculture, right? Just one quick thing before you go, because we're almost out of time, but these robberies, a lot of people have been horrified. In fact, there have been so many of them that we've lost track. There was a fire set at the Premier's office the other day, which seems to have been some kind of intimidation tactic.
Mm.
Then there was the NPA that was robbed. The Hawks have been robbed. Licensing departments have been robbed. What's the real story of this? Is this some coordinated attack?
There are all kinds of theories doing the rounds. The fire you talk about at the Premier's office, it was at the same time another fire broke out at the Eastern Cape Premier's office. And in that case, we know already that documents into an investigation of corruption were set on fire and have been burnt. I don't know if that can recover. The Chief Justice's offices were burgled.
Mm-hmm.
The NPA, the Hawks. So for me, one of the things I find incredible is that no one gets caught. No one, the investigation seemed to go nowhere. The investigation to the Chief Justice's break-in, someone appeared in court the other day, and the case looks extremely flimsy. It cannot be, if you're someone like me who grew up on those trashy paperback thrillers, James Hadley Chase, that kind of stuff, you'd know that, you know, it smells. It smells to high heaven.
Mm-hmm.
And the agencies which should be investigating don't seem to be able to even get close to these kinds of crimes. So I think it's coordinated. I don't think it's a coincidence. I think that connect the dots and you can see that evidence, dockets, key information about particular judges and investigators is being collated. And I think that you may find that some people are being blackmailed because information about them has been picked up. I think that there is something rotten at the heart of our security establishment. And I don't think David Mashobo, our Minister of Intelligence or State Security, as we call it, is doing much about it or knows how to do anything much about it. Or perhaps he knows and just isn't doing anything about it. I think that it's time for an explanation. We have an office in South Africa. It's called the Office of what is it called? It's like the public protector for intelligence services. So if you are being spied on, like you guys, don't have you had your phones going shh? You can go.
You definitely get spied on.
Easy now.
You can sometimes hear David Mathlobo falling asleep when you're on an important call.
No, Justice, come on. Go on to the more exciting stuff. So we have an office for that kind of thing. The intelligence, it's gone out of my head. Anyway, this office can investigate that sort of thing. I think this is time for that office to wake up and actually start investigating what's going on here. Because I think that this sort of thing is dangerous because in 5 months' time, more of these happen and Jacob Zuma goes to Parliament and says, I think we need a state of emergency because we seem to be under attack from Western forces or from all these NGOs or from whoever. And I think it's a dangerous climate is being created in South Africa, and we need to nip that in the bud very quickly. And someone needs to do it. And it's called the Office of the Inspector, Intelligence Inspector General. Inspector. Okay. So we need that office to jump into action. But I don't think all these break-ins are coincidence. I think that there are something is going on, and one unit is certainly working on all of them.
All right. Thank you very much, Justice. Another action-packed episode of The Burning Platform. If you missed any of that, you can always listen to the podcast from beginning to end and get your fill for the week. There are lots of people who want more. If we do more, you'll explode. Your head will explode. It's hard enough for Justice to try and dilute all of this, or not dilute, but to comprehensively summarize it for us every week. And as you can imagine, there is stuff that we always get to early enough, and there's stuff that we have to leave out. So there it is. That's enough for this morning with The Burning Platform. It's brought to you by Nando's every week on cliffcentral.com. Justice, we'll see you next week.
It's been great. Cheers, guys.
Thank you very much.
This is cliffcentral.com.